Mr. Matt Waldman, it's post-draft. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. We're getting busy, you know. You're toughing through it, though. You look good, but we can tell you got a little
bit of cold. It's better to look good than to feel good.
That's what I think. I think America. That's an American statement. That's a statement about America, maybe.
And that is where I'm at today. I look much better than I feel, but we will get through this, and because I don't want to miss this. There's a lot of information that must get out to the peoples, the masses. Yeah. There's a lot of feeling and fucking done.
Before we do that, we'll just say I did provide a preliminary cheat sheet to RSP subscribers for the pre-draft, post-draft package that you paid $21.95 for. If you paid $24.95, you're waiting for just the quick answers. That's coming in June. So if you want both, well, you can order it now. But I'll send out that preview cheat sheet once a day to people who've ordered after I announced it. So you'll get it sometime tonight or within 24 hours after you purchase it. And the RSP should be out sometime, probably on no later than Saturday. It's usually out earlier. So we'll see. But I give you about 5 rounds worth of draft information in the sneak preview that may be subject to change a little bit here and there.
What's that? I heard someone say they didn't have their rookie scouting portfolio. They should go to mattwaldman.com and buy one right now. That's what I'm saying. You get the pre-draft, you get the post-draft, get the whole thing. So there was a lot of excitement on night one of the NFL draft, specifically when the 8th pick rolled around and the Atlanta Falcons took someone you like an awful lot, Michael Penix Jr. Look, people were very upset by this pick, right? There was a lot of angst. And I get why. They just paid Kirk Cousins $180 million. They should be in win now mode. This is not a win now selection. What do you make of it, Matt? Is it rant worthy?
Yes, it's absolutely rant worthy, but for the opposite reasons that everyone's ranting about. In fact, I'm ranting against the ranters, and this is going to take a minute, so relax. Because first of all, let's talk about Kirk Cousins' contract. Most of it's being paid for the next 2 years. So by year three, they have an out, and most of that money can be, most of what's going on there either can be renegotiated, they get rid of him, whatever. They want him to win now. Second of all, Kirk Cousins complaining about not knowing, who cares? That's not your job, okay? Third of all, him saying that he's disappointed because he would have liked for them to use a pick to help them win now. Well, let me tell you something, folks. Let's think about this for a minute. Kirk Cousins is going to be 36 in August. He's coming off an Achilles tear where he said in the same breath that he was disappointed and stunned about this, that he cannot run in anything other than a straight line right now in April. Okay. Now we do anticipate that he will be able to break a pocket because he said he wouldn't be able to do it right now, but we anticipate that he'll be able to do that. But this is on one level, it's a smaller level. It's a hedge in case Cousins can't make it all the way back or in case he gets hurt again. Because last year, the Falcons had a playoff caliber run game, playoff caliber pass attack weapons, and an up-and-coming defense with some decent pieces in place that were starting to play well, but they didn't have a quarterback, and that's why they were picking 8th right now this year. So if Cousins goes down, they're in the same spot they were last year. So, you know, to me, this was a pick that helps them right away because they at least have an upgrade at quarterback. Because whether you, and this may be the thing that people have to say. People are like, well, Michael Penix didn't really grade out for most people as a first round pick, or he was a late first round pick. You could have traded back a little bit more to get him. But here's the problem, Bob, is that James Palmer reported there were 3 to 4 other teams, the Raiders, the Seahawks, and the Saints, that were all for trying sure to trade up to get him specifically. And James Palmer at NFL Network isn't a joke about reporting that kind of stuff. He's pretty legit. Right. So if there are that many teams trying to trade up, Atlanta is trying to trade back, what, another 8 to 10 picks? And if they do that, then they tip their hand and the teams trade up and probably get him. And here's the other thing. Whether it's Penix or whoever it is that they were going to try and get, whether just a quarterback, let's just say in theory, whatever it was, whether you like Penix or not, next year, there are going to be more teams needing a quarterback than this year. And there, and at least from a projected standpoint, we don't know what the reality will be. There are a lot fewer quarterbacks who are going to be considered first-round picks. The bigger key is that there's a much bigger demand for quarterbacks. So if you're going to get a quarterback that you think is first-round worthy, it's this year. They liked Penix. There were more who liked him. And then the whole idea of like, well, he's going to be 27, 28 before he actually gets to start and see if he's any good. Well, Kirk Cousins was 27 before they saw that he was any good. Drew Brees was 27 before they saw it. And Steve Young was 31. So, and you end up playing another 8 to 12 years if you're just any good. You actually maybe play another 16 to 20 if you are really good. So a lot of this is, to me, is more optics than reality. You know?
Well, I thought so in the moment, even, and I kind of thought if had they made been able to pull off the trade they were trying to do to land Leto Latu, that might have helped them out a little bit. There's a little win now, but they couldn't pull it off. But also, like, you know, there was some additional angst over the fact that Cousins was shocked and stunned by the news of this, and his agent immediately put out a statement. I'm guessing the reason he was shocked and stunned by this, or at least was not informed about this, was that everybody knew exactly how he felt about it minutes after. Had he known before, they would have known how he felt about it minutes before, right? You know, whatever plan they had to keep this secret and pull it off and keep somebody from jumping ahead of them to make this move, I think Kirk Cousins would have pretty much.
Because, yeah, and it's such a great point. And let's just say this. You know, Netflix loves Kirk Cousins. Netflix audiences love Kirk Cousins.
I love Kirk Cousins.
You know? Fuck Kirk Cousins right now for this. And I like Kirk Cousins for his work ethic, for his quarterbacking. But here's the thing. You want to be a locker room leader? You don't do what you just did.
He did say, to his credit, they said he called Penix later and, you know, once he got over his parents being stunned.
Yeah, because somebody probably told him he needed to relax and do the right thing here. And here's the thing that's so ironic about all this. Who got drafted by the Washington Commanders way back in the day?
The irony. The surprising.
The surprise pick. They picked Robert Griffin.
Right.
Yeah. Kirk Cousins. Who was seen and, you know, I mean, did he help that team right away? No, he probably didn't. But he did give them some relief from Robert Griffin when Robert Griffin got hurt. But yeah, the thing is his career was born in a dysfunctional environment, and there's times that he's a bit dysfunctional in the way that he deals with things. And before that Netflix special, there were a lot of teammates that talked about that they thought he was a little odd and off-putting and all these different things. So,
you know what? He's not dysfunctional at making money, and he made a bunch more of it, and he will earn that joyously in Atlanta. He will probably lead that team to some degree of success, assuming he's on the field and plays up to his recent level. Vikings fans will tell you he will disappoint them in the playoffs, but we'll see. I mean, like, I dig Kirk Cousins. I think it's a great spot for him.
I agree.
For the pieces around him. I don't think that Michael Penix selection, you know, if there is a single complaint, it's, you know, the win now argument. And I think you I'm not saying you're wrong, but I think that is a valid argument saying why are you not putting all the best pieces around him for immediate success?
It's valid, but if you're going to take a defensive tackle, I would argue that you should, if you're going to try and win now, your offense is the thing that's actually the strength of your team. You would want to upgrade your offense. And I would argue that Kirk Cousins probably being as good of a quarterback as he is, all good quarterbacks have big egos on some level. And his ego was probably hurt that they picked a first-round quarterback because he's probably thinking, I'm going to play for another 4 or 5 years when you're turning 36 in August. And really, they need to get a quarterback ready when he leaves, and they need to have one ready if he gets hurt. And to me, that's a bigger help than a defensive tackle, if you ask me, based on how that team performed without one last year. I just think that we know that the quarterback's the most important position in football, maybe in sport. And if you don't have, you know, we always talk about it would be nice to have two. And the Falcons went and did that and are developing a guy. And this is the Jordan Love plan, because you have young receivers who have experience and you have a quarterback who's in place who can get, at worst, he'll get intermittent playing time if Cousins gets hurt. and then he's going to get a chance to develop. And he's a good quarterback on top of that. So to me, this is the best plan. I understand the argument, though. I do. But I just don't agree with it.
You invoked Jordan Love. I thought it was interesting. You know, we talked about it before. Last summer, Brian Gutekunst talking about, you know, the importance of building, you know, a group with your young receivers. The question was, why didn't you bring in an outside free agent, a high-profile free agent? It's just because we want our talented young quarterback to build and grow with his young wide receivers. It feels like Elliott Wolf might be doing a similar thing in New England, getting Drake May and adding a pair of young receivers.
I think it is, but I wonder if Elliott Wolf even understood the assignment fully, because my thought is this. The difference between those two things is that Jordan Love had 3 years of ramp-up time, or really three years of ramp-up time before he inherited those young receivers. So he was in meeting rooms. He knew the scheme. He watched Aaron play. He played himself some. He got some time to be fully confident in all the things that take up bandwidth that shouldn't take up bandwidth once you're on the field. So he got to play through all that so that his bandwidth was wide enough that he could handle what's going on. Drake May is a first-year starter, and he's going to be working with either some veterans or first-year receivers. If the first-year receivers are on the field more often than the veterans, say Kendrick Bourne can't stay healthy, Pop Douglas is a second-year guy, Polk and Baker, as good as they could be, are first-year guys. This seems like one of those situations where your quarterback can't rely on your surrounding talent to be accurate with reading coverage, making adjustments, and running the right routes on as consistent of a level as you need to really level up fast. So I think this one's a bigger risk than the Jordan Love plan.
Definitely a baptism under fire approach, and that doesn't always yield dividends. Sometimes the fire wins.
Yeah, 33% of the time, Bob, okay, which is the other thing that I'll add when I bury the horse called the Michael Penix thing, which is...
Beat it a little more.
Yeah, I'm going to beat it a little more because I'm like a mobster who's mad. Like, I would just put it this way, is that...
Somebody's been watching Sopranos.
Yeah, exactly. If it takes 3 to 4 years to figure out whether you're going to keep that rookie quarterback you drafted in the first round or not, and we'll say four because it's usually 3 to 5. Say if you miss on two out of three first round quarterbacks on average in the NFL, and you have two in a row that you miss on, that's 6 to 8 years right there that you've spent money on and you've gotten no return. And then you may add another 2 years to the guy you got right. So we're looking at 8 to 10 years in the desert, in the wasteland, looking for that guy. So don't tell me about the whole sit thing either. Like, maybe it's a good thing to sit because, again, it's more about intermittent playing time than just sitting all the time. So, yeah, I just look at this and it's like, put him in the fire too early. That's a danger. We're going to wait too long. No, because you've waited too long. Ask the Tennessee Titans if they've waited too long since their last good quarterback. And who was their last good quarterback? Steve McNair?
Did they have one? I think that's it.
Yeah. Steve McNair was their last good quarterback, if we're being for real.
I mean, Ryan Tannehill has been serviceable at moments.
It's serviceable, yep. But they didn't draft him. They drafted Mariota, and they've drafted Malik Willis and Will Levis. And
is that Will Levis slander coming my way?
Yeah.
All right. There's no slander, no Keon Coleman slander. How fucking excited are you that he's in Buffalo? I've been wish casting this for about 2 weeks now. It just felt like the right pick. And I know the people are going to complain about the 40 time, 4.61. It's a little slow. But like, his gauntlet drill was the fastest at the combine, faster even than one Puka Nacua. Things worked out well for him. I don't know. I mean, I'm putting too much on that. I just feel like this is the right fit for an offense that has a need.
I think it's a good fit too, and I think that people will make the mistake that this is a referendum on whether they should have on who's better, Xavier Worthy or Keon Coleman, because the Bills gave up the opportunity to get Xavier Worthy to get Keon Coleman. When I think it's a more nuanced argument about, it's a referendum on what type of receiver would have been a better fit for the Bills offense, a outside speedster who's small, or a big ball winning receiver who's not quite as fast on that level. Now, here's the thing. Brandon Bean saw the same thing I did, which was that he gets better separation in his routes than what his speed, you know, his timing may show. Now, Matt Harmon, who, you know, we certainly all have a lot of respect for on the show, tracked Keon Coleman and said that, you know, he's probably more apt to be a big slot receiver at best, and that's the only way he's going to probably be successful based on the charting that he's done in history, and that his charting shows that Keon Coleman doesn't get good separation. Now, I haven't talked with Matt in depth about his process, and Matt has done a good job overall, obviously, with what he's done. I mean, it's been very good. It's been a good process. But there can be holes in any process where maybe what happens here is that there are certain players that are a little bit more exceptional to what the historic rule within his process may be. So it's very possible that a receiver who maybe gets one to two, you know, maybe one step on a defender at a certain point, he may not mark as good separation when, if you project it to the NFL, it actually can be. So that may be part of the issue there. I don't know. I'd have to talk with him about that, and we'd have to kind of figure out where that is and see what happens. But I know this. At worst, if Keon Coleman winds up playing inside and being more the Gabriel Davis, Kenny Galladay-esque type of performer, where they put Khalil Shakir, Curtis Samuel, and, oh yeah, that big, tall, separating tight end who can go up and win the ball, Dalton Kincaid, as your outside option, and allow to kick Keon Coleman inside and play that Michael Thomas type of role, he can do that very well. And that's really where I think he is, at worst, is going to succeed Gabriel Davis and be what Davis, people thought Davis might become. But he's already that right now, because he catches the ball better than just about any receiver in this class. He's more physical. He is good after the catch. And he is good at being able to adjust off structure and create openings and find openings. And that's something that with Josh Allen is good. And if he does prove that he's a good enough separator for the NFL game, and that maybe Harmon's process maybe doesn't always project to the NFL level of route running to the nuanced level of success for every receiver that it could, then you're seeing that Josh Allen also can throw with anticipation and has confidence thrown in tight windows. And that's the kind of thing that I projected for Keon Coleman to have this kind of success. So I like it.
These are all the things that I've seen as well. And I'm not nearly as smart as Matt Waldman or Matt Harmon. But this seems like, go back to Sesame Street analysis, one of these things is not like the other, and he is the other thing in this passing attack, it seems like to me. Yeah. I like Keon Coleman. I like Xavier Worthy too. Is that merited in his new landing spot in Kansas City?
I fucking love Xavier Worthy. And I was kind of disappointed at first to the idea that they were that the Bills were going to give up Xavier Worthy. I'm still kind of like, you just gave up Xavier Worthy to the Chiefs. Like, but not like any other team was likely to trade up and get him from Kansas City. He might have landed in Kansas City anyhow. I don't remember exactly the way the draft picks were played out. Because I thought the Chiefs still had, well, no, they would have had to, they might not have gotten him. They gave up Xavier Worthy to the Chiefs, yeah, I think.
I think it was a conscious decision. I think it was something, it was like their plan. They knew, they had a pretty good idea who the Chiefs would want to take as they move back.
Yeah, that's true. So that's the tough part to swallow, because the narrative will be, and I mean, the Bills won't care so much about the narrative, but the Bills fans might. The narrative could be, if the Chiefs beat the Bills again, and Xavier Worthy's a pivotal part in that, they're going to lose their minds. But Xavier Worthy, to me, compared to DeSean Jackson, in terms of like, that was his reachable upper range comparison, him and Isaac Bruce. He's not a gadget player. He's not the next Mecole Hardman. He is a legitimate outside receiver who can work over the middle. And yes, the Chiefs offense is a little bit more difficult to learn for receivers, as we've seen, but Xavier Worthy wasn't playing in the MAC. Okay. So I think that we're going to see this play out well for him. He's a sharp guy. I think we're going to see him succeed pretty early. And look, Sky Moore, we see not being able to get it done. You know, Mecole Hardman, they let him go and brought him back on a gadget level role. We know Kadarius Toney just is not between the ears or, you know, youth wise, mature enough to be to play to the level that he's capable of physically. And we know Rashee Rice is in trouble. So you look at all of that, Worthy could be one of the best impact players this year.
Is an 80 catch season like reasonable?
I think it's possible. I think I would say 60 to 80 catches is reasonable this year. That's the range. Right. I'd say is within reason.
That seems like an all right. Let's say Rashee Rice plays all year and gets like 100.
Yeah.
Marquise Brown gets close to 100.
I mean, if that happens, then you're probably looking at somewhere between 45 to 60. But
Travis Kelce's going to catch some too.
But Marquise Brown staying healthy, I'm just not sure.
Okay, you know? Sure.
Yeah.
Ladd McConkey, could he be the top producing rookie in 2024 in his new home with the Los Angeles Chargers?
Yeah, I absolutely flirted with putting him as the number one receiver overall in the post draft. Mainly because the volume is definitely going to be there for him playing in the slot in the Chargers offense with, you know, replacing Keenan Allen. He is going to be the next Keenan Allen for this team. And I know that Harbaugh's going to have and Roman have a slightly different offense than what we saw from the Chargers. But if you look at what Roman did, in Baltimore, the middle of the field is where a lot of the love goes. You know, with these receivers, look at Mark Andrews. Look at the Marquise Brown when he was there. You know, Ladd McConkey has an opportunity to be a high volume guy. He's the best receiver on that team instantly, if you ask me. I mean, Palmer's not bad. Quentin Johnston is and needs to get better. And he's been put on notice because they got Cornelius Johnson, who will be a bit of a project. And then more importantly, they got Brendan Rice. And Brendan Rice has a little clap attack in him too, but not nearly to the extent Quentin Johnston does, because Quentin also has the tracking issue.
I was going to throw out, I think the big concern there is, you know, is it going to be a pass heavy enough offense? Do we think 500 attempts is a reasonable number?
Yeah, I think it's potentially, and if it isn't, it'll be way more efficient because right. I think the run game is going to be much better.
Right, that's been the hallmark of these, you know, these run-heavy Harbaugh offenses. Is they're also very efficient passing offenses as well because they're wide open because they run well. Speaking of run, Blake Corum, the Michigan running back, shows up with the Los Angeles Rams. Is this the end of one Kyren Williams?
In 3 years, it will be for the reign of Kyren Williams. But this is a Chester Taylor situation. If you remember Chester Taylor out of Toledo, drafted by the Ravens, found his way over to the Minnesota Vikings and had 1,500 total yards in a season the year before Adrian Peterson showed up. And then the year that Adrian Peterson showed up, while Peterson had 1,300 yards, Taylor had another 800 yards that year. So I think what you're going to see is a changing of the guard. Now, Blake Corum is no Adrian Peterson, but he could be a Ray Rice type of back, which is still pretty awesome. I think they'll split time this year. But you'll probably see Corum, if he stays healthy enough, be the man this year in terms of being the production leader, no later than next year.
All right, that seems reasonable. And I kind of think, you know, just like, and this is a fuck you, Sean McVay, but he seems to have issues with running backs, right? Like he's very, very fickle, I think would be the word I want to use. And I think that's like a understating a little bit. Cam Akers would. Like have more to add to that, I think.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, for sure. You know, Zach Evans might pipe up too.
Malachi Corley in New York. Is this an instant hit?
It is for the rest of the league if you like making fun of the Jets. And I mean, I think that Corley could be an instant hit if Aaron Rodgers plays all year, the offense is loaded, and they find a way to use Corley as more of a gadget play. I respect the fact that Corley is a terrific runner after the catch, catches the ball well, and does some good things over the middle. So you could see him being used in maybe the way that the Packers worked Alan Lazard open, you know, in that one good season that he had. and maybe that they do the same thing to derive matchup, you know, winning matchup opportunities or scheme up plays where he doesn't have to win man to man very often. And that's the path to success. But it's a singular path right now. And gadget players tend to get lost in terms of volume. They have a couple big games and then there's not much there. And I fear that that's really the case with him, because unless he shows that he's a much better man-to-man player and that projected better to the NFL than what I saw on tape, I think that this is more of a historical Jets pick, and that's not a good thing.
That is not a good thing. Joe Douglas not making the change that you would like to see, apparently. Fuck it. All right. Jalen Wright, like, this is the big one that has everyone super exercised, right? Like, what are the Miami Dolphins doing, adding to a running back room where we were already having enough trouble figuring out? I don't think we were doing it right. We're drafting Achane, it's like the eighth running back off the board, and Raheem Mostert is in the eighth round. And now we throw in another wild card, Jalen Wright. More speed. I don't think that's a bad thing, but it's not great for fantasy managers. Are we feeling this or fucking it?
I'm feeling it as a football person, and from a fantasy standpoint, I'm still feeling it, because last year, I won a league because I drafted Raheem Mostert after the 12th round and just sat on him and had the luxury to sit on him, and that worked out at the end. And I think, you know, I pulled a Bob Harris doing that, you know? That was the play. And when you look at it this year, everyone's overvaluing Achane. What this is to me is a statement that Achane is the change of pace guy. He's the home run hitting change of pace guy that they don't want to give too many touches.
Right.
And that Mostert is the main guy, and Wilson was the do it all. We could plug him in a lot of different spots if we need him, if everything really goes to hell. And then the Christopher Brooks guy surprised us. So I think when you look at this room now, well, I had Jalen Wright compared to Raheem Mostert as like the aspiration for him. The Dolphins saw the same thing. It's not that much rocket science. They saw the same thing. And I think they see him as Raheem Mostert's eventual replacement, because Raheem's pretty old for a running back.
Yeah, not a lot of carries. Well, relatively speaking.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Not a lot of carries, but still, so you heal a little bit later. I mean, I didn't have a lot of carries, and as I got older, I healed a little bit longer.
You don't have a top end speed of 21 and a half miles an hour.
That's either. Right. You could probably take off one of those numbers, and that's what might be my top end speed these days. You know, unless my dog's dragging me and I'm on a skateboard. That's about it. But yeah, so I like this. I think if anything, the guys who are likely to be out, Christopher Brooks obviously could be out. That might be a good thing for him if they're just looking at speed. If they're looking at ability, it'll probably be Salvin Ahmed and then Jeff Wilson due to age.
For guys like Ahmed and others, and some of the players drafted, I think, are we underestimating the changes of rules for the special teams? We need more coverage guys, not just return guys, but coverage guys, right? I mean, it's going to be and like we saw a lot of players go to places like, why are they going there? Maybe that's, part of why they went where they went, as opposed to like leading roles in the backfield. I'm thinking Jalen Wright is not that guy. He's going to have a role in the backfield. But there's a lot of guys out there that people go, why is he there? Well, might be because he plays special teams.
Keelan Robinson is a good example of that guy who's getting drafted for that.
Kate Stover does not. Well, he probably will play special teams, but he lands in Houston. They just re-signed Dalton Schultz. It seemed like other guys, Ben Sinnott landing with the Commanders and Jatavion Sanders landing in Carolina, had like really favorable landing spots. I'm not sure Cade Stover's is. How do you feel about it?
Oh, fuck yeah, I do. In fact, I think that's the best landing spot of the three you mentioned. Now, again, I'm being, it's like contrarian Monday for Matt, I think, probably right now. So no, I'll state that if we look at the Cliff Kingsbury offenses in Arizona, the best output for anyone was Zach Ertz for a 588-yard year. The rest were 200 to 300 yards. And it's not that they needed to consolidate the position. If you look at it each year to year, the best out, I mean, we're looking at in his offense, if this holds true, we're looking at 500 to 600 yards for the tight end, for the tight end one. I love Sano, but that dropped him a couple of spots for me in the post-draft, at least early on. I may revisit that and continue to do a little more research, but I'm not
I guess when I say good spots, like Jatavion Sanders as well. I mean, the Panthers have never had like a tight end, right?
Yeah, they haven't. I mean, this is an easy Sanders. I love Sanders. Okay. I think, I mean, I don't love, but Sanders' landing spot I love for him because Tommy Tremble is a fullback
right.
who should be on special teams. And so, you know, this is a good spot for him. So it's over. In 2 years, Dalton Schultz will be likely be gone. His contract will, I think, will be up or they have an out.
Probably so. Yeah, I would say that's true as well.
He has trouble. He's had trouble staying healthy. He's a good blocker. So if they want to go to two tight end sets more often, Stover's going to be the guy. Because Schultz is more of an underneath guy who runs okay after the catch. Stover is more of an intermediate threat who also runs well after the catch and is a, I would argue, as good, if not better, pass catcher than Schultz is right now. And while it's not a great short-term play for Stover, by the end of 2025, the only player under contract in the receiving game right now is Tank Dell. Now, they'll probably bring Collins back, but that's Stover's going to be a key part of that, and we know that Stroud wanted Stover. That was probably a Stroud pick.
I feel like this is bad news for my Brevin Jordan share, so we'll see about that.
Yeah, me too.
my dynasty share. J.J. McCarthy. I think this is – I mean, when I was looking through the list of teams that needed quarterbacks, this seems like a super favorable landing spot for the obvious reasons. Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, T.J. Hockenson, Aaron Jones will be along for a year or so. But also, I think Kevin O'Connell knows how to run an offense. J.J. McCarthy, stock up.
Yes, fuck yes, it is. It's, you know, I mean, again, you're going to be – Kevin O'Connell likes to spread the field. He does like a quick game, even though they do have great vertical threats there too. This is just a good situation all around where even if McCarthy proves that he's not a great vertical passer, I think he'll be good enough with that team, especially what they can do after the catch, that he's a guy that you elevate if you weren't quite sure about him. I think he's one of the top three guys.
Really?
Yeah, one of the top, not overall, but one of the top three to four quarterbacks for sure. Like he and Jaden Daniels, I'm kind of back and forth.
I kind of felt like this too, but I felt like maybe I'm like unknowledgeable about the entire quarterback thing because just the body of work in college. I mean, like you look at, you know, compare him to say another quarterback who had tons of at least play like Bo Nix, right?
Yeah.
And then you see and lots of passing. Right? You don't see that with J.J. McCarthy. Is that not a concern for us?
It could be. I think it is a concern, but I think at this point, if you're going to be speculating about quarterbacks who are in that range of the RSP score of 75 to 79, that's that range that is basically they excuse me, talent-wise, they could be starters, but really landing spot and how they're developed is going to be pivotal. And you know, the fact that you have two Pro Bowl caliber receivers and a Pro Bowl caliber tight end and a Pro Bowl running back on a decent offensive line, I think that this is a good scenario for him to level up fast. So I like that situation more than, say, Bo Nix, who I liked more than McCarthy. But who's he throwing to right now? If Mims and Franklin take off and they trade the black hole known as Courtland Sutton, you know, maybe that could really work out well. And I don't think that Nix is definitely bad for Denver, but I don't know if he's going to level up as fast. But he may also be a steady plateau and be less up and down.
Ricky Pearsall, the newest of San Francisco 49ers, is his value, are we feeling him as someone who can contribute as things stand now, or does he require a trade?
He requires a trade, I think, because if you look at the way that this team aligns their offense, it's a lot of two receiver sets with a tight end and a fullback. And if that's the case, Pearsall is likely playing in the slot with Debo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk outside. Now there's been rumors that Ayuk and Samuel wanted trade, the team was trying to trade the other. So if they do get off that trade, then Pearsall will likely be a flanker in this offense. So he has the speed too to be a split end. So he'll probably play outside way more often and get that opportunity, and that will help him. But he's still a very good player that should be in demand in fantasy drafts right now. He may just not be an instant impact player.
Another 49er, Isaac Jarendo. Is it better to be – would you rather be behind Christian McCaffrey, or would you rather be Braylon Allen behind Breece Hall and the New York Jets?
I'd rather be behind Christian McCaffrey with that offensive line. I mean, Trent Williams looks like he'll play till he's 54. But seriously, I think that this is just a better scheme. It's a well-oiled machine, and they have all that surrounding talent. Garendo, you know, is a best for gap scheme, but the way that the 49ers run their outside zone, it might as well be a gap play because they'd simplify it for the running back. And they run a lot of gap plays too. So Garendo really is a bigger, is really more Elijah Mitchell 2.0, with a little more speed. And that's, you know, that could work out well.
All right. And I guess, you know, like long-term, you know, for Allen does not look good with Breece Hall, a very young man, right?
Yeah, that's what I would say. I mean, he may get, you know, the big thing about Braylon Allen is that he's in a loaded running back room. They drafted more running backs after him. So they're kind of throwing things up on the wall behind Breece Hall to see what sticks. And I think Allen dropped as far as he did is because teams see that he didn't fully put things together. And there was maybe a little bit of concern that he rested on the laurels of his first year. And that maybe that some of that is on him and not just on that he had a different offense. So they may feel like he has some things to prove, but they love the upside. And I just think, yeah, Breece Hall, I mean, the way that Breece Hall came back from his injury, he didn't look great in that Buffalo game at first, even though he had good production. You could still see that he was still getting his confidence. But even though the line didn't play great and it was banged up last year, the line looks better on paper this year. We'll see if Tyron Smith can stay healthy. But the line looks better. And Breece Hall later last year looked good. So I think, I just think that there's too many ifs with Braylon Allen to rate him over a guy like Garendo.
All right, Malik Nabers lands at the Giants, where he'll play with the great Daniel Jones, one of the best quarterbacks of our era. And if you missed it, go out and watch Malik Nabers' press conference. I don't know if that was shade or just nerves or what that was. It was interesting. So are we worried? Feeling a fucking the Giants is a great landing spot for Malik Nabers.
It's not a great landing spot, but I'm not as worried as I once was. At one point, I was thinking about dropping Malik Nabers a little further down my list, but I'm keeping him atop my receiver board. And the reason being is that when you look in the past, I mean, if Jacoby Brissett can give, you know, Amari Cooper strong work, or if, you know, I think that Drew Locke, the combination of Drew Locke and Daniel Jones can still do that. And I think that a lot of, you know, because there is a big, I think there's a big step down from Darius Slayton, what he did well.
By the way, he wants more money. He wants more money, right? Darius Slayton, he's not showing up for voluntary workouts, so we'll see if there's not some correction there.
So to me, Nabers is so good, and I think the quarterbacks are good enough that he may not give you 1,400, 1,500, 1,600 yards that maybe he'd be capable if right off the bat if he had Kyler Murray or, you know, Justin Herbert. But I think that he can still be an 1,100 to 1,300 yard receiver, and that still may be good enough to be the top producer right away. And if they and after this year, the Giants will be looking for another quarterback and probably a good enough one that will make things better.
So I think the top three wide receivers, maybe it's easy to think Malik Nabers has the least favorable landing spot. Between the other two, Rome Odunze in Chicago with Caleb Williams, or Marvin Harrison Jr. in Arizona with Kyler Murray, feeling a better landing spot.
Yeah, I mean, and that's really the crux of this question is how you regard these three receivers in a landing spot. If you're playing for right now, probably Marvin Harrison has the the best opportunity because he has the best quarterback, some decent enough receivers that could maybe make the next step. Certainly with Trey McBride and Kyler Murray, there's enough there that he should, as the guy being the man, that there should be enough pressure taken off of him that he may not have, you know, 1,400-yard year, but he should have no worse than like an 800-yard, 8 to 10 touchdown season, which is still good enough to be like a starting wide receiver for fantasy leagues, in most fantasy leagues. But the thing is you look at that and say, all right, long term, is that the best situation? Long term, maybe in 3 years, Roma Dunze has a better situation because he had better receivers to learn from. He had easier, more efficient opportunities to work with early on, and he arguably has a better quarterback in Caleb Williams, I would say, if Williams plays to the level that I think he will and develop into. But this year, he may not be the man. He may be a lower volume, high efficiency guy, and that means that Malik Nabers is probably better than him, even if the quarterback situation is up in the air. And at the end of the day, I look at that and say, the Giants may not figure it out but I think that you have to take into account that they're going to try to, and that I think Nabers can still be good. I mean, A.J. Brown was good with Mariota and Tannehill.
Sure.
So I'm okay with the idea that Nabers doesn't have a great quarterback, but he might still be okay.
It seems like the initial spit take reaction in Buffalo, Ray Davis is going to kill James Cook's fantasy value. Like a goal line back comes in. And like, isn't it more like Josh Allen's going to continue killing any goal line back's value in Buffalo?
Yeah, I think that's a possibility. He could end up killing that. I think Ray Davis gives you short yardage closeout carries. He's not a good receiver, right? He's an okay receiver right now, but not great as a pass blocker. There's potential in all those areas for him to get better reasonably quick. But if it plays out the way Buffalo is, they're generally cautious with their running backs first year because they want to protect Allen. So, you know, expect James Cook to have another good season and Davis to flash some promise as a runner, but not be all the way there as a back who's capable of being full time without an emergency situation unfolding in Buffalo.
I feel like when we looked at the list of running backs who like come out a little bit ahead this after the draft, it's like Zamir White to me does. Isaiah Pacheco, nothing there. Joe Mixon does as well. Can I say the same for Devin Singletary or not?
Yeah, I think you can, even though the Giants probably think otherwise. If you look at the Giants' depth chart, the way I see it is this. You have Tyrone Tracy now. You have the former slot receiver, Brightwell. There we go. Gary Brightwell, former slot receiver at Arizona State, who then migrated over to running back. You have Joshua Corbin. They all have something in common. They're all fast-ish gap runners who have maybe a little bit of receiving skill, but not very good at processing between the tackles. And I think the Giants, either it's their scouts or the decision maker above the scouts, really love shopping for running back groceries on the basis that running back is instinctive. You just need the athletes, and then they get experience, and they'll be fine. And I think the coaching staff said, I can't convince these fuckers otherwise. Let me go ahead and get the complete antithetical player to everybody else on the depth chart, because at least I know that he will get the yards I need him to get in Devin Singletary. And then the Giants go out and draft Tyrone Tracy, a Kenyon Drake guy who is like the epicenter of what the grocery shoppers have been getting in New York. It's like asking for tomatoes and they keep bringing you apples, you know. And I think that's kind of what's going on here. Tracy could be good at some point, but he's basically a change of pace speedster right now in the Kenyon Drake mold, but aspiring to be what Drake was aspiring to be, you know, when he came out.
Well, I like both apples and tomatoes. I could do with either of them. Like a perfectly fine. Sometimes mixed together. Is that good? I don't know. All right, Matt Waldman, Rookie Scouting Portfolio, post-draft edition. Give us the details again.
MattWaldman.com is where you can order it. I will email you when it's ready, likely sometime no later than Saturday, maybe before that.
I would like a Friday.
Yeah, most people would. So, and I tend to try and do it Friday too. I do have to do a little bit of traveling on Thursday, so I might even get it out earlier, or it might just have to be later if I can't get it by then. But you'll get a cheat sheet preview. You got one actually last night or this morning. Yeah. So, but if you're buying it after that, like right now, or you just bought it after that announcement, I'll deliver that to those folks every 24 hours from that purchase point, once a day in batches. Let's just put it that way. That way I can finish working on this for everybody, not answering questions about the cheat sheet or in terms of right now, it's just a preliminary thing. So you'll just either have to trust it or not. And if you don't want to, it's okay. I understand. You still have the pre-draft. There's lots of information in there. You could use that. You might wind up a little bit better because, us fantasy people get a little bit overreactionary. When I put on my scouting hat, I feel a little bit better about the, even though I've been doing fantasy longer, I feel a little bit better about the long-term stuff because I've put a lot more time and thought into that. So MattWaldman.com is where you can get it.
All right, go get that. And we'll be back here next week for another episode of the Sterling program, Feel It or Fuck It. You can listen to that at podcast and YouTube.
You sound like you. Bill Curtis.
I was going for that. Feeling it. Love you, Matt. Goodbye.
Love you, bye. Feel better, man.